Dag Hammarskjöld said, "The longest journey is the journey inwards." And it's true. That journey that we take to discover ourselves, to find out who and what we are, to become masters of life. Often, our lives have been defined in poems and writings as a journey that we take here upon the earth. A journey. In these four lessons, I've been speaking to you about such a journey that was taken by the princes of Serendip. And I hope you have become aware that any person who catches on to the secrets of the world of serendipity, that they too become a prince or a princess of Serendip. You have the possibility of being prince or princess. And this journey that you are experiencing on the earth called your life is that strange experience that all the great masters have taken so that they might awaken to their higher self. Now, there's something very exciting about a prince or a princess of Serendip. They begin to see things in a new light. Everything is seen and experienced by them in a new way, just like the original princes of Serendip who left their father's house to make their journey in uncharted lands. All other princes or princes come to know that someday they will be back on the grounds of the kingdom, and that's the objective of the journey. The journey is to reach or to experience a dimension of life that is above the ordinary. The word serendipity is but another name for a higher, more divine order that is the result of a higher, more divine consciousness that is available to any person. Now, one of the secrets of the princes is that in all of their journeying, they never forget who and what they are. They carry the kingdom's secret with them. Ordinary people never remember who they are. The princes never forget. And therein lies the difference between ordinary and extraordinary beings and the higher life that your heart understands and intuitively seeks. Now, this awareness gives an amazingly rich insight into life and permits a prince or a princess of Serendip to combine a light touch, meaning that whatever is happening at the moment, you don't take it too seriously. You see it in a different way. It does not offend, nor does it take charge of you or your consciousness. You're always on top of, always working with solutions and not with problems. Even though you have a solid perspective, you are aware that life has its difficulties. But you also know that for every difficulty, there is a perfect solution. And you know that everything that is happening for your good. Princes know that all things are working together for their good. Ordinary people believe that everything is working together for their disfavor. I'll take the matter of so-called miracles. Often in their traveling, the princes were beset by excited people who claimed they had encountered a supernatural happening. And the princes took it all in stride with maybe yes or maybe no attitude. They didn't take anything too seriously, including miracles. And when they encountered things that seemed unusual and strange, they saw in those things the unspeakable wonder of a world where nothing is absolutely final and few things are irrevocably fixed. They believed that, in a certain sense, everything is a miracle. They also believed that the adventure is in the quest and the joy is in the journey. And this is true for all of us, for each one of us. Now, do you believe in miracles? Do you really? I don't mean do you believe that miracles happened a long time ago in another place caused by some exalted being, but do you believe in miracles in your life now? Answer the question carefully, and your answer will tell you whether you have started to become a prince or a princess of Serendip, because they do. They do. But a prince or a princess of Serendip says that miracles are where you find them, but they have another insight. They say miracles are where you create them. You find them where you create them. That the greatest miracle of all is the simple fact of your being. You exist. Don't you exist? Check yourself. Right now, pinch your arm. Do you exist? Can you feel that? Can you hear me? Then you exist. Now, in the next 100 million years, you will not find one miracle greater than the fact that you exist. And out of that miracle can flow a series, a stream of unbelievable events that will be absolutely miraculous and yet not strange, not even incredible. Everything that happens is credible, but I'll get to that in a few minutes. The three princes of Serendip traveled always looking for the unexpected. They expected the unexpected. Normal people don't. Everything surprises a normal person. Everything delighted the princes. And they were tantalized by spontaneous happenings which they realized were part of the natural order of things, the miraculous order of things, that they knew that everywhere they went, something had to happen. Do you believe that everywhere you go, something strange, exciting, is going to happen? Do you believe that? If you're a prince or a princess, you know that it must happen. You don't know what it is, but you know it's going to happen. And that's a miracle. Now, one evening, when the princess stopped at an inn at the edge of the village of Cana in the land of Ephraim, when they checked in, the innkeeper sighed and said, "How I envy you your opportunity to travel. How I would like to see the Acropolis in Athens and the Agora, which was the center of the old city, and the prison where Socrates drank the hemlock. It really was a cave, you know. How I long to gaze on the pyramids of Egypt, particularly Cheops, which is 450 feet high, and Saqqara, oldest pyramid in the world. What wouldn't I give to walk the Alcazar of the Moorish kings at Granada, the original of which was built of red stone and red and white intermingling?" He talked this way at great length, mentioning historic scenes and giving such minute details about each of these places. And finally, the princess said, "How is it you lament your lack of travel, yet you speak of these places with greater knowledge than people who have been there?" "Oh," moaned the innkeeper, "I travel only vicariously by way of travelers who stop here as guests. I travel by things I hear and things I read." "Be grateful for that," said the princes. "Mind is the best of all travelers. Mind is the best of all travelers." Now that seems to me to be an excellent observation, this bit of princely advice. By all means, let your mind take a trip, many trips. One day, a number of years ago, after I became a prince. Surely I did not look like one, and there were those who do not suspect it yet. But after I became a prince and began my journey, my odyssey in life, I discovered one day, and I recall clearly where it was. It was in New York City, and I was on a television program there. And suddenly I remembered that I was on that television program there, actually in New York City, because some months before I had envisioned myself there in that place. I had traveled there in my mind. I had preceded myself there because I had given my mind permission to break out of its old, moldy patterns of the past. And I had given it its want to travel other places. And you know that almost every place that I have permitted my mind to travel, I have followed. Is that not delightful? Your mind is the best traveler. It will take you anywhere. First, in fancy, yes, but then if you give yourself permission and time, you will journey into regions that would absolutely amaze you. Take a thought trip in which you open up your mind to creative ideas and invoke the flow of something superconscious. Instruct your mind to be prepared to run into new acquaintances and to be ready to meet strangers unawares. And you will see that you will travel down a trail that will absolutely delight and certainly not amaze you, prince or princess of Serendip. Now, the original princes were bold enough to suggest the value of daydreaming and fantasizing, supposing, reasoning, speculating. And they saw these as modes of travel that we all too often rule out. But think and let your mind wander. Not haphazardly, but take it gently by the hand and lead it out into the places and the experiences and the events and the quality of life. Let your feet walk on plush carpets and warm, sandy beaches. And get the feeling that nothing is too good for a prince or princess of Serendip, and in time you will discover that nothing is too good for a prince. And for a princess, the best. Marcus Bach in his book tells a story about a bottleneck at O'Hare Airport in Chicago, and some of you had the experience of traveling to O'Hare. We did last year and missed our plane by 5 minutes because we were circled for an hour and a half. It often happens, and most people get upset and look down on the ground wishing that they were there. If this should happen to you again, do what Marcus did. Let your mind take its journey elsewhere, there high in the air. Go to distant places and take a long walk through your life, and you'll be amazed at what will happen to you if that overly long carousel keeps going round and round in circles. Now, Marcus said that suddenly the man in the seat next to him, with whom he had conversed little during the trip, began to laugh softly to himself, and he said, looked at him with some apprehension, wondering if our overly long circling was getting through to him. It's a funny thing to me, the man said. I just had a revelation. That so? I had ventured. Yes, he said lucidly. I just made a decision. For weeks now, I've been trying to decide between two jobs that have been offered me. I've been going in circles like this airplane. And now all of a sudden I've made up my mind. I know definitely which job I'm going to take. Well, good, I said, but in my heart I was thinking how serendipity plays its part. And I was wanting to ask him whether he thought he would have made the decision if we had landed on time and had not been trapped in the air for so long. You see, missing his plane turned out to be the best thing that could happen to him because he got his direction where he wanted to go, because his mind had wandered into each of the possibilities and walked through each of those possibilities, and suddenly, in the midst of one of those possibilities, clearly in his mind, he came to know. His mind took him there first and revealed to him what he needed to know. New discoveries are waiting within you, lying not out there somewhere, but within reach of your experience. Mind is the traveler. Give yourself that opportunity. One day not long ago, I stepped into our recording room here to my right, and as I walked through the doorway, I heard a voice, not unfamiliar to me, but one that I do not listen to very often. It was my own voice, talking in the first lesson of the secret power of serendipity. And as I stepped into the doorway, I heard myself say, "Did I say that?" Well, of course I said that. I just heard me say that. But I asked the question, "Did I say that?" And I thought, well, that's incredible that I said that. It wasn't incredible at all. It was coming back off that tape was exactly what I said, standing here where I now am. It would have been more wonderful if what I said came back different from the way I said it. Now, there have been times when I've stood here and talked to you and wished later that something else would come back, but it never does. There is a certain credibility of the incredible. It would be amazing, really, if we made a tape of a rock and roll tune and when we played it, we got a Bach sonata. You would really be surprised. You'd say, man, that is incredible if that happened. Suppose you planted an acorn and an apple tree grew. You'd say incredible. And it would be true. It would be unbelievable if it then happened. Or take the matter of cosmic affairs, how the planets just seem to hang out there in outer space. And do you know that at this very moment, science knows with precise pinpoint accuracy when eclipse of the sun and moon will take place 4 and 5 and 6 and 10,000 years hence to the second? Is that incredible? Absolutely not. It's credible. It's not incredible at all. It's the way things work. If the sun does not come up in the morning, then you can say, that's incredible. But if it comes up, it is the order of things. It is the way it has to be. Now, the three princes of Serendip, soldiers of fortune as they were, had a few irrefutable convictions. One was this: there is a law that what you put on tape will come back. Mr. Nixon discovered that. What you sow, you will reap. The forces of nature which seemed incredible would be truly incredible if they ever ceased to demonstrate their credibility. The princes were frequently asked to tell fortunes, and they were requested to counsel people. And always before they did, they held a conference, and they got their heads together. Let's figure this out on the basis of credibility, they would say. For example, one day a lady came to them and said, "Will I be lucky in love?" And the princes put their heads together in a huddle. And one of their secrets was that they had an uncanny capacity to see the record of life of everyone who came to them. They had a mental filing system. You've had this experience yourself, haven't you? There have been flashes of insight when you've known you've had access to information that you did not have access to. Well, princes of Serendip, that's what we are. Functioning in our higher consciousness, can see and know and comprehend, and so they did. And when they processed the information on this woman client who wanted to know if she would be lucky in love, they realized that for 20 years, she was now 39 years of age, she'd been saying to herself, "I am unlucky in love. I am lucky in everything else, but I'm unlucky in love." And so they turned to her and said, "Sorry, but we see no change in your destiny." "Incredible," said the woman. "Credible," said the princes. "Plausible, reliable, believable. What you believe comes back to you. That's credible. It's not incredible. Now, if what you want is not happening to you, that's credible. If you understand the law. You see, serendipity says that God foreknows, but he does not foreordain. There are people who want to know, is life so planned or rigged that everything that's going to happen to me has already been worked out? Well, the answer is yes and no. God knows how God's creation is going to act under certain circumstances. And if you'll take a good look at yourself, you will also understand how you have been acting and thinking and feeling under certain circumstances. The same insight that the princess had into the experience of the woman, any one of us can have into our own minds if we will but look. And suddenly, we can see that if what we want to happen is not happening, that's perfectly credible. But we can also know that if we fulfill the conditions for what is going to happen, that we wish to happen, then in an incredible way, the credible will take place. Did you follow me when I said that? Listen to the tape and you will. Now, princes and the princes of Serendip are fate makers. I love fate makers. I spent the early part of my life letting everything in life determine my fate. Everybody around me was a fate maker for me, and I kept looking for someone to come and save me. Now, there's no one else here that's ever had that experience at all. I wanted her or him or them, preferably them, to work it out for me, but they never did. And I would see certain people that I would envy. They got the breaks. I had to struggle for what I got, but they got the breaks. They were on top of things, and I let things get me down. I felt at the mercy of chance and controlled by circumstances, and somehow these fate makers were exempt from the laws of life. It was disgusting. But it wasn't disgusting at all. It was incredible. I was the incredible one for not understanding what was happening to those very credible people. Now, people like the fate makers were those that the princes of Serendip had in mind when they said, the most important person you can meet on the Serendipity Road is you. Now, I want you to think of that. You've been looking for someone else? You never find them until you find you. Think how often you've wished to meet someone that would help you get the break or lift the load or turn the trick or score the point or get you over the hump, looking for a fate maker. Stop looking for a fate maker. Become one. But in order to become one, the princes say you must meet yourself. Let me give you an example. Last week in Florida, in a strange hotel, checking in, the room clerk told me that the elevators were down the corridor and to the left. And so I picked up a bag and two bags, as a matter of fact, and started walking down the corridor looking for the place to turn left. And as I walked down the corridor, I saw a man, a tall man, walking toward me, carrying two bags, just like I was carrying. And as I looked at him, I thought, a rather distinguished-looking person. He is someone I would like to know. Personable. And as I got closer, it seemed as though one of us was going to have to move or we would bump into each other, and I discovered that it was me, and this actually happened because the wall was a mirror, one of those frosty mirrors, not the clear kind. And the corridor to the left was just before you get to the mirror, and I found myself walking into me. I discovered me again. And I looked at me. I kind of looked at me from all sides. And I looked pretty good. I did. But I'm talking more about the inside than I was the outside. Because I was looking at a fate maker. Whatever it is that we're going to find, we have to find it first within ourselves. The princes knew that, didn't they? And something inside you is saying to you right now, all you need is to truly come alive. It's all within you. It's there. It really is there. Marcus Bach tells the delightful story of his Aunt Selma. Let me read to you what Marcus had to say about Selma. Perhaps you've never heard of my Aunt Selma. Few people outside the little Wisconsin village where she lived ever did. But as I look back on her now, I can see that she was a fate maker. For example, Selma used to be annoyed by all sorts of things. A wall switch that continually caused the living room lights to flicker. A door that squeaked. Letters she misplaced. Shoes that got scattered in the closet. There were 100 things that irritated and annoyed Selma. Now, Selma was single. She was my youngest aunt, and Selma finally admitted that she wanted a man. My mother, who was Selma's sister, said that it was this longing for a man that made Aunt Selma fidgety. Be that as it may, one day, for no apparent reason, Selma turned to fate-making. You see, Selma had been standing there waiting for a man to come and discover her, to come and save her, to fix the switch in the living room that made the lights flicker, to fix the squeaking door, to take care of her. And so one day, don't ask me why, it could have been an act of desperation or self-assertion, a sudden awakening, or maybe she read something in the Ladies' Home Journal. At any rate, Aunt Selma went downtown and came back with a can of oil for the squeaky door, a letter file for her mail, a shoe rack for the closet, and an electrician to fix the switch. In one afternoon, she cleared up those annoyances and stopped being annoyed forever. And then she set about correcting others' things inside herself. She became a fate maker. Now, by the same mysterious transition, Aunt Selma began to dress up instead of dressing down. She was really quite pretty, but she used to say, "When God gave out good looks, I wasn't around." Now, evidently, she now thought she would begin to work with what God had given her and go on from there. And one day, an amazing thing happened. She came home to announce to our family that the electrician who had come to fix the switch had asked her to marry him, and she accepted. He was a bachelor who was considered quite a catch around town, and they got married and lived happily ever after. And my mother often wondered about those living room lights that flickered and the switch that had always needed fixing. But I knew what changed Aunt Selma's life. She became a fate maker. There aren't very many fate makers around. Most people stand around being irritated by things that flicker, and their lives flicker dimly. You want something in your life? Fulfill the conditions, and it will be there, as if by magic. All princes of Serendip understand this great principle. If you have temporarily lost your power to make exciting things happen, it could be that in some important matter, you stand on the wrong side of right. Almost everybody stands on the wrong side of right. You don't understand that? I'll explain it in a moment, but let me give an example. Last Sunday, a visitor to our church, a mother with her young child, entered the front doorway just as I was passing, and so I escorted her to our nursery. And as we walked into our nursery, she saw a number of plastic pails of various colors and sizes. And she paused for a moment, and she said, "Oh, is this a new game that the children here play?" And I said, "No, the roof leaks." Bach tells a similar story in his book about the time that he was in Philadelphia visiting a friend, and the friend took him to see a famous synagogue, and on this midweek morning, a damp and dreary day, they approached the building, and he and his friend agreed that architecturally the synagogue certainly justified its name, Mount Sinai, because through the fog it was spectacular. It looked like a huge mountain rising above the fog. And he said inside they were welcomed, and Frank Lloyd Wright had done his talented best to create that great building. They were welcomed by the rabbi, who was happy to show them around, and they noticed a number of plastic buckets, different places in the sanctuary, and Marcus Bach, who is highly informed about these matters, but certainly thought that that was a strange way to conduct a Jewish holy day, asked the rabbi what holy day they were about to observe, and he said, "Holy day, my foot, the roof leaks." And he went on to explain that the complex symmetry of the top of that strange building had presented a problem, and they'd spent thousands and thousands of dollars, but it had still leaked, and finally they had complained to Mr. Wright personally about the annoyance that continually plagued them. And this eccentric but great architect thought for a few moments, and he said impatiently, "Who complains about a little water on Mount Sinai?" What's the moral of that story? Everybody on earth stands on the wrong side of right. We're always right, aren't we? You were right today on I-96 or I-94, wherever it was that that fella got in front of you. You were right. You were right. We know exactly who to blame. We stand in the right. We know that we're right, and we can explain it to anybody who wants to hear it. If the roof leaks, we know who made it leak. We know why it's leaking. It's someone else's fault. They didn't fix it right. Isn't that true? Now, let me tell you about our roof. 2 years ago, we had a small leak downstairs beside the wall at the kitchen. It just leaked every now and then, not very much, down the wall, and no great measure. But one day, the board and I decided that since we had a little leak, that what we needed to do was to get that fixed, because obviously a little leak would turn into a lot of larger leaks. And so since we're some perfectionists of a sort, we decided to get the leaks fixed. And we had a person who fixes roofs come over and gave us the luxury type of flat roof. And as soon as he fixed the roof, and the first snows came last year. You talking about leaks? We have never had leaks like we had since our roof has been fixed. And then during the summer, we had him come back and re-roof our roof so that it would not leak. And now we have more leaks since the roof leaked. Now we stand on the right side of right because we know that it's his fault, don't we? Except, wait a moment. A prince or princess of Serendip does not find fault. A prince or princess of Serendip uses absolutely no energy blaming anyone. It won't keep the roof from leaking, will it? Well, get out your little multicolored pails and put them under the leak, and in time the snow will go away, and you can have them come and roof the roof that's been roofed, and probably it will stop leaking. But if it doesn't, whose fault is it? Doesn't matter, does it? See, everything has a right side. It's possible to be right and wrong at the same time. You can be right and have a wrong reaction. And most people stand in their righteousness. And if you want to lose your power, stand in your righteousness. Have your prayers not been answered recently? You probably are standing on the wrong side of right. You know exactly who's wrong and that you're right. Remember when the master teacher said, if you have aught against any person, go to that person and get it fixed. Didn't say fix the roof. Fix the reaction. And a strange thing will begin to happen. We've made new arrangements for our children in the nursery that they will like even better. Then I'm sure in time the roof will be fixed. But the assignment is to see beyond so much that seems unfair, unjust, and deceptive in the world. There's so many things that aren't fair. You know that, don't you? Don't draw yourself up in your self-righteousness. Princes of Serendip never do. How could we grow without these things? You grow through adversity no less than through the pleasantries of life. And you grow as you learn to see yourself from all sides with an eye that is single, an inner eye. Joaquin Miller wrote, "In men whom men condemn as ill, I find so much of goodness still. In men whom men pronounce divine, I find so much of sin and blot. I dare not draw a line between the two where God has not." Princes of Serendip live no fault lives. It doesn't make any difference whose fault it was. Let's find the solution. Jesus said, "Agree with thine adversary quickly," and suddenly you don't have an adversary, and suddenly there is an increase of power and of wisdom and of insight. Serendipity is but another word for higher consciousness and the experience of that higher consciousness. And every person upon this earth is on the journey to experience the larger and more fulfilled life. And this is the story of every person. If he or she leaves their father's house and walks a fairly straight line, every step they take brings them nearer home. They may think they're going away, but they're actually coming back. And this is a strict law. It's karma. It is pure mathematics. Einstein proved mathematically a number of years ago that you can stand anywhere in the universe and flash a light, a laser beam, straight ahead of you. And if you stand there long enough, that laser beam will come back and hit you in the back of the head. Now, you may have to stand there about 5 billion years, but he will come back and get you, because in the universe, there are no straight lines. Everything that goes out comes back to its source, and that is a universal law. And you may think that you've been walking away from your good, but you have not. You've been walking toward it. Now, this is very important for a prince or a princess. I remember once that during a gasoline shortage, there was a national slogan printed everywhere. "Is this trip necessary?" Meaning, this trip to the store, is it necessary? Save your gasoline. And you may have wondered, if you read that slogan, if this trip in life that you're taking is necessary. You may wonder that if you didn't even read the slogan. I'm sure that you have wondered if certain things that happened were necessary. What about that marriage that did not work? The job that did not work out? Those years that seemed to be a total loss? Those years of alcoholism that the locusts seemed to eat? Whatever it was. Tonight I was talking to someone who had a smile on his face, and I talked to him 2 days ago, and there were tears. And in the midst of those tears, he thought that the experiences of the moment were not necessary. And tonight he knows that not only were they necessary, but it was a good trip. After all, a good trip. In closing our time together, let's close with the ending of the story of the original princes. "Came the day when our 3 loyal vagabonds awoke one spring morning to see the sunrise over their father's kingdom. Their odyssey, their journey, to all intents and purposes, was ending where it began. They stood on the knoll of Kinawata, viewing old scenes, domes of temples, sheep in the fields, the neatly thatched homes of the king's subjects, the open gates of the castle on the hill. Nothing had changed, yet everything was different. 'The true eye of life is the mind,' said the youngest prince. 'Every moment of travel is a coming home,' mused the second. 'I can hear our father greeting us with his good morning,' commented the eldest, 'as if we had never been away.' They paid their homage to the rising sun and started walking toward their father's home, single file." Are you aware that this is what we've been doing all of our lives? Walking toward our father's home. and that every event that has occurred is a part of that journey and of that experience. And that while nothing has changed, everything is different. My all-time favorite story, and you've heard me tell it many times, is the 15th chapter of Luke, the story of that other prince of Serendip, the prodigal son or daughter. Remember? Jesus was telling the story, making the point that life, or that the universe or God, has different levels of personal response, and that if you and I choose to be alone, if we choose to take ourselves apart, for a long time we will have the experience, the seeming experience of going away, of being alone, and of being deprived. If we decide that we can work best on our own and that there is no magic, that principles do not work and that miracles do not occur, then we have the right to have those experiences, and we will have those experiences while other standing, other princes are journeying back toward their father's house. This man had two sons, and when the younger told his father, "I want my share of your estate," instead of waiting until you die, his father agreed to divide his wealth between his two sons. A few days later, this younger son packaged all his belongings and took a trip to a distant land, and there wasted all his money on parties and prostitutes. All kinds of strange things happened to him, and in time his money was gone, and a great famine swept over that land, and we've all experienced that famine. And he began to starve, and he persuaded a local farmer, this Jewish boy, to hire him to feed the pigs, and the boy became so hungry that even the pods he was feeding and the swine looked good to him, and no one gave him anything. His good did not come from ordinary circumstances or from other human beings. He was journeying back home and did not know it. And then a very serendipitous thing happened to him because he fulfilled the conditions. One day he came to himself, to his senses. He got honest. He began to observe himself. He saw himself in a mirror of his mind. And he said, "I think I want to go home. I will arise and go to my father, and I will admit openly, honestly, how it has been." And he did that, and the moment that he did so, saying, "Father, please take me on as a hired hand." Now, remember that he failed in his original goal, but he still had great expectancy, and this must be true for us. You've gone out and failed in your original goals many times. It doesn't make any difference. Still expect. He sublimated his goal and said, "I no longer want to be the prince, make me a hired hand." And his father said, "No, I'll make you a prince." And he called the servants and they killed the fatted calf. And you know the rest of the story. His father said, "Quick, apokatastasis." Remember? The magic word. Because he fulfilled the conditions. Now listen to the rest of the princes. They entered their father's house, and the king was on his way to a cabinet meeting in the throne room. And when he glanced their way and saw them, he paused and raised a hand in greeting. "Good morning," he said to his three sons, as if they had never been away. "Father," said the youngest, "I think you should know that we went away because we knew that it would be difficult for you to decide which one of us should rule the kingdom after you were gone, and we thought we would make it easy for you." "There's more to it than that," added the second prince. "We thought that somewhere along our journey we would find the final answer, but we didn't. The final answer was our goal, Father, and since we failed to find it, I am wondering now whether you have any idea how and where it can be found." "We did find some lesser goals," the eldest prince admitted. "At least I did. By a strange discovery, it occurred to me that you will never be appointing any one of us as your successor, because since you always were, you always will be. Nor did we ever actually leave the kingdom, because your kingdom is everywhere. And finally, how can we take your place since without us, you would not be?" With this, the princes looked at one another as if in a moment of understanding. And when they turned to look at their father, he was not there. But in the throne room, there were sounds like voices, and a light brighter than the light of morning streamed through the open doors and covered them. And it was strangely, deeply, silently, beautifully quiet. And dawning over the world, there was laughter and joy, and all was well. And that's the way it really is with you. All is well. God bless you.
This concludes the final tape in this series entitled The Secret Power of Serendipity. by Jack Boland.